Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding, and president of From the Heart Productions. Our guest is John Corser. He's an award-winning producer of commercials, promotional films, music videos, feature films, television productions, and educational films. His productions have spanned 20 countries and 5 continents, and John's clients include Isuzu, Toyota, Mercedes, Paramount Pictures, Universal Studios, DreamWorks Pictures, and many, many more well-known TV and record groups. So, Carol, John's been quite a producer with a lot of top studios, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he has, and we're so honored to have you with us, John. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm glad to be here. And I want to let you know I've read your book. It's very good, and I recommend it. So it's here on my shelf right now.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. That's a work of love. And the second edition, I had a lot of fun because it's the pitfall sometimes that people get into that I had to cover the second time around. And I feel that that was the most helpful thing I could do. But we have a lot of fun things to learn from you today. So let's start with when you decided that you wanted to work in films.
Well, I didn't really decide to work in film. It kind of decided for me. I went to school at the University of Michigan in philosophy, and I was going to be an attorney. And I decided I didn't want to go to law school, much to the chagrin of my parents. And there was only one program open that was qualified. It was telecommunication arts, which was essentially the film school, the master's degree program in film at that time. And I started doing a thesis film, and I learned to love it. I mean, it uses all aspects of business and art and science and just all different kinds of disciplines mixed into one, and I love that. So that's why I chose it. I originally wanted to do journalism, TV news, because I liked the live, you know, immediate feel of that. And then I went into doing documentaries, and then from that, narrative. So it just kind of cascaded one after the other as I liked one thing, and then the next, and then the next.
Incredible. So you've worked on all of them, according to your bio, right?
Yeah, that's the weird thing. The first project I ever did was a documentary on the Sister City Project, Huigalpa, Nicaragua, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, in Christmas of 86, during the essentially kind of the war there. It was winding down, but there was still guerrillas in the mix. And the U.S. government, it was an anti-Reagan administration thing, and they said you can't go. The State Department said I couldn't go, and that made me want to do it all the more. So I took 4 people down there. We shot a documentary, and that was the first film I did. And then from there, I just kept. The second one I did was in Japan, Taiwan, and China on a comparative study of math education in the U.S. and Asia. So
that must have been interesting, John.
It was an incredible experience. I mean, one of the things that it taught me early on is that anything's possible if you plan it right, and that it's really about organization and structure as much as the creative idea, because getting into places was as much of an ordeal. There should have been a story about that as the story we were telling. So, you know, it taught me that there's more to it than just following the story. And that's why I like being a producer, because that's what that aspect of the production is. And I also directed, but I like being a producer better now.
Yes.
Well, Don, I'm sorry, Carol, go ahead.
No, that's where the power is. I mean, you open the doors, you get everything together, and you're in control of all the paperwork, right? The chain of title is in your hands from day one.
From day one, as a line producer, but even as a regular producer, but a line producer, you know, everybody entrusts you with the money. And with that trust comes power and responsibility. Also comes blame if you screw up. But the important part of it is that you are the balance to everyone's fears. So, you know, the director is thinking, am I going to have enough to shoot what I need? The producers and the executive producers of the studio or whoever is thinking, are they going to spend too much and bankrupt the picture? And so you're in that little nexus position to make everybody feel calm, tell everybody what's going on, and get it done. So, yeah, it's both powerful and burdensome at the same time.
Right. Right. Well, when I saw a motion picture film through studio film and tape, usually the checks I got were 101, 102, 103, right? They never bothered me. I knew the money was in the bank. But the scary ones were the 356, where they had been shooting at night and day, and it's a weekend, and you hope to heaven that your money will be in the account on Monday. But it all depended on who was producing, who was the line producer, and we got to know who the best ones were, and we always liked to work with them.
Well, there's been positions, too, where I've been working at a production company. I won't mention any names. And say it's like a commercial or it's even some sort of independent productions where the cash flow doesn't match the cash flow in doesn't match the expenditure at the right times. And so you're slow paying some groups, even though the money will eventually be there. And so as a producer, you need to watch how that is managed so that you don't essentially either scare or piss off your vendors and crew. Because if they think they're not getting paid, they're going away.
Absolutely right. That's the scariest part. So you do have a lot of responsibility, I know. Well, go ahead, Claire, with your question.
Oh, yes. Well, John, I was just going to ask what shows you've worked on over the last few years.
Last few years, okay. Well, I just finished my third season of Verses and Flow. It's a music and poetry show that airs on TV1. It's a great show. I recommend it. I mean, I'm just saying that it's a show I would watch even if I wasn't producing it because I like poetry, and it's not like anything else you see on TV. It's not like a poetry slam. It's really a celebration of poetry and music. We shoot 12 episodes in 6 days, so it's shot really fast with a live studio audience that we bring in, you know, a different 300 people for each show, so that's 600 people a night. And, you know, we just shot that over the first week of June. Is that right? No, first week of May. I'm sorry. My months are mixing together. And then before that, I was shot the Sundance Channel broadcast from the festival. It was 10 days in Park City on Main Street that we built a studio at an art gallery called the Hope Gallery up at the top of Main Street. It's called the Sundance Channel headquarters. And then, let's see, before that, I don't know, it goes back and back. I'm starting a new show, actually an award show. We shoot in New Orleans, 365 Black Awards. It's a celebration of African-American community that McDonald's sponsors and gives out an award for people committed to the African-American market.
Oh, my gosh. And is that based on industry, things they have achieved in
Humanitarian, industry. The different awards are like lifetime achievement, arts and entertainment, et cetera, you know.
Well, I think doing live events, that has got to be harrowing.
Oh, it's way different than single camera or you know, film, dramatic TV style. I mean, you're dealing with essentially it's live to tape, so you're dealing with a production truck and a crew that works differently together. All the names of even the crews are different. Like, you don't really have grips because you're not setting up flags. It's all the lighting is from a grid, so it's very fascinating. It's way different.
It's a whole new learning thing for you,
yeah,
then.
Yep,
right?
A whole new learning thing, yep.
Right, because sometimes I produce events, and they are exhausting.
Yeah.
To get,
and they have to go off perfectly. They have to be absolutely perfect because everybody's live. The consumer experience, the experience in the room, is just as important as the experience on air.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Well, that would be the coup to produce something like that. Well, go back to the Sundance thing. In other words, you were interviewing people from who were attending Sundance. Is that what you guys were doing?
Yes, we bring in, well, basically we have two types of setups. I build a four-camera studio setting in a building on Main Street at the Hope Gallery. And I don't know if you've been to Park City or if anybody has. These are old mining buildings, old mining towns. So the buildings are not very big and they don't have high ceilings. So I have to create essentially a studio space inside that building. And I say I, and I really mean my production designer and my DP and people like that. But we build this space out. We have, I don't know, 4 to 6 Avids and graphic stations in the back where we take the stuff out of the studio, edit it, and then get it up to the network that night or the night after. And we bring in the filmmakers, the actors, what we pick are the interesting films of the festival, usually about 40 of the 300 we get through there. And then 18 or so will make it to air during the week, and the rest will play either on the web or on the channel over the rest of the year.
Wow, what a project that is.
It's a massive project. Then we have 4 field crews that go out and do Man on the Street, or they do branded entertainment segments for, say, Brita or L'Oreal or something about, you know, being at the festival.
Incredible. So, and all of that is uploaded and seen throughout the year on the channel.
On the channel or on their web, either way. It depends on the segment, but yeah. It plays usually probably during when they air the movie. If it gets up on the play against that.
You must work 24 hours on shows like that. I mean, how many hours do you put in a day on?
Yeah, on those types of shows,
yeah.
When you're actually even in prep too, it seems like it's 24 hours. But the normal is 12 to 14 hours a day, easy. And then during production, it's 16 to 18 for me. It's a lot.
Wow.
A lot to manage.
It is a lot. And again, you're dealing with people under extreme stress and hard circumstances. So you must have really good crews. Do you hire most of your crews yourself?
I know most of the people that I hire. Me and my production manager, I'll trust her or his judgment on different people. There's also people I work with throughout the years that I like to bring on to shows because I know them and I trust them and I don't have to do as much work if they're on. But I try to interview every person on the crew, from the production manager to the PAs to the camera guys, and you know, I obviously take recommendations from my department heads. But yeah, I try to meet and get to know all of them.
I think that's really important, and also that I always hear from producers like yourself that they look for congeniality, for people who get along with others. And that is as important as their bio, their history, right?
It's critical that the crew work together effectively. Yeah, I've been on crews and been managing crews that, me included, that have fought with people on in the production over, it's mostly power struggles or responsibility issues or who's supposed to do this. And, when people are trying to protect their budgets or their departments or anything other than making the best film, that's when you run into trouble. because what you want is everybody dedicated to the outcome, not to their fiefdom. And so when you get in those fights, it's really costly to the production, both financially and emotionally. And I think it reflects on what you see on screen, but you'd have to analyze that in a different way.
Yeah, I would think it would. It's a unit. It's one working unit. It's amazing that films really get made when so many people have an integral part in the production, right?
But we're all egotistical. I mean, I know that even myself, even me, I mean, we believe in what we do, and we always think we're right. So when you get 10 people in a room that have the same feeling, guess what?
Yeah.
There's a bit of conflict there. And then if you deal with both your ego and your insecurity, you're doubly in trouble. So, if I'm feeling like I'm not doing a good job, and the only way to do a good job is to be in conflict with somebody else, then guess what? You all of a sudden have a big conflict. So you got to manage that both in yourself and with the other people around you, and realize that you take the approach that everybody's looking to do the best job they can to make themselves look good. And so any fights are related to that. Nobody wants to fail.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, you want the next job. This is an industry
where... You're only as good as your last.
You're only as good as the last. That's so true. Well, what size budgets do you work on?
The typical, I mean, it depends. We'll go through a couple of them. Like, I can't tell you the exact job and the exact numbers because those are confidential. But say a TV pilot, dramatic hour, from what, $2 million to $4 million if it's network something as big as G.I. Joe. I mean, you can look at the numbers on that. I was a production supervisor on that. That's enormous budgets. Things like commercials or promos, it's about $100,000 a day, depending on the complexity in the art department and, mm-hmm. Where you are, if you have to travel. It varies. But I've done things from essentially free or $5,000 to, $200 million. It just the issues are essentially the same, just on the way you approach them is different.
Well, do you work on independent features?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm more than just a line producer on those most of the time, because on independent features, if they're under the $5 million range, the producers and directors don't have as much experience, so I'm kind of like a counselor and a guidance of what's reasonable to spend money on and where the money should go. So I have more than just a line producer role, although I will just line produce a project. But it becomes more of that because I can give them advice on how to structure the financing or manage the debt or other sorts of things that go beyond just line producing.
Right.
Well, John, there are so many producers on a show that sometimes it's good to really outline what each one does. Wouldn't you agree? So would you tell us what a line producer does?
Well, yeah, that's the biggest confusion I see. People think producers are producers. And it's different when you go from TV to film to commercials. And what you call them actually doesn't mean the same thing in the different worlds. So, for example, on a feature, you have your executive producer, your associate producers, your producers, your line producer, and so on and so forth. As a line producer, I'm responsible for the budget and schedule and making sure that the project comes in on time, on budget, and when things are changing, I relay that to the producers and the financiers to make sure that they know what's going on. And I manage it with the different departments to say, okay, you have X amount of dollars for your department, and make sure that they spend the money in ways that goes to screen or that makes the difference from the creative on the movie.
Can you really look at what they have outlined and tell in each department? I mean, that's a lot, John.
Well, you trust the people you're talking to, I mean, hopefully, but you let them budget what they think it is, and then you try to translate their numbers into the creative effect. So if the director says, you know, I need a remote shack in the desert, I have to look at the way that's structured on the page. Is that a remote shack in the desert that's built on a stage, completely constructed, and then we do the desert in green screen, or do we actually go build it in the desert? You know, those choices need to be communicated both from the creative side and from the producer side to say what's cost effective and the best for the movie. Like if the shack in the desert, everything's an interior, then you don't possibly need to build the exterior. You can just shoot a plate shot and it's the exterior, you know? So you have to look at the page and see what it means and to the creative and to the story and try to make judgments based on that.
And yes, and then that's where you have a chance to help save them money sometimes, right?
Exactly. So if we want to shoot a iceberg in Antarctica, like guess what? We don't want to go to Antarctica. First of all, it's extremely dangerous, costs the crew too much in travel. You know, how do we build that on a stage and then cut to maybe stock footage that is that iceberg? And that's, you know, that's on a major scale. But there's simpler things, too, just like in everyday. Do you make this a green screen shot or do you make it a visual, a actual practical shot?
Right. And that's a discussion with the director. Do the writers get involved? Because sometimes writers write so grand, and yet when what they have on paper could be $500,000 for one day shooting.
That's
and
right.
The director and the producer get together and talk to them. Do they go to the writer and change it, or does the director?
Well, it depends on your director and how, what your relationship is with the creatives. I mean, I try to build very strong relationships early on so that my choices are understood as what's best for the picture, and I'm thinking of the creative at the time. But I don't ever try to judge the creative. I let the producers and the director decide that, and I offer suggestions and ask them questions. They're like, okay, how important is this scene to the film? Like a friend of mine is doing a film, and he has a semi-tractor trailer roll in and then explode, and there's people inside it. And he wanted to create a CGI of a tractor trailer flipping around over a car down the road, kind of like Transformers. But it's the independent feature, and it's like, look, I don't want to tell me why that exterior shot is so important. Can you show the exterior tip over, cut to the inside churning with the people bouncing around, then cut back to the exterior of the truck sliding? Way easier to do. Is that something that's possible, rather than having this big CGI expensive shot? And he said, yeah, because it's not about the truck flipping over; it's about what's happening to the people inside of it. So solved this problem, saved, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely right. Yeah, good. Well, this is what I hear, is people say a good line producer can really save you money. So that's one of the ways. And I guess the other way is knowing people that you work with all the time and what is a fair price, so that you can look at a budget and know that it's right or wrong, or you can do better than what's on there?
Well, yeah, the idea of making fair deals is critical, especially on people that are going to be working together for 30 or 40 days. Because if somebody's on the set that feels as if they're getting cheated, you're never going to get good work. It just will be a battle nonstop, whether it's a vendor or a person or whatever. So, when people want to do films, you know, say under $1 million or under $500,000, and they're asking all these favors, it's got to be clear to the crews that people are working with what their benefit is out of it, and not that, oh, you should be lucky to have a job, because nobody feels good in those situations. So you need to negotiate that as a line producer early on, so that when you're in your 28th day and they've been making $100 a day or less for the whole time, that they're dedicated to the outcome and they have an investment in that, feel like they're connected to it, versus when you go to a $200 million picture and somebody's paying you a day rate to be there and do whatever the department needs at that time. It's a different way of looking at the project, and how you negotiate that makes a difference.
Yes, it does. To have them with the same attitude on the 28th day that they had on the first day is really important, right?
Yep.
And you know you're really doing things well if that's the case.
That's right. Well, you know that you got something really special then, and you want that every time you go to work. You want that when you're working on a movie. You don't want to go there and say, oh, God, I can't wait till this is over.
No. That would be a terrible way to exist. Right.
So as you were saying, knowing what a low price is on any item used in a production can give you a good negotiating position.
Well, it's a fair price. I mean, I've been in situations where I've negotiated somebody too well, that they had other reasons they were taking the job and it wasn't the price. And then so I'm getting what I think is good value for the production, because I have somebody who's qualified that wants to do it for less than I expected it to cost. But then it turns out either they have a bad attitude or they can't afford to do what they said they were going to do because they misbid it. And I have to watch out for that. You can't just bid somebody down to the lowest possible price and then have them not be able to do the job. So you got to know where the bottom point is and when it can't be done too. You can't just say, okay, I got 28 days of sound for $2,800, and that includes all the equipment, all the guys, all the gear, and you just know it's not going to be possible. You know it's not. So you don't want to go there, even if somebody's willing to do it. And I've had some companies that weren't familiar enough with the process that they bid it wrong. And I knew it at the start, and so I wouldn't let them bid it that way. I tried to give them other ways to look at the project so that it was more clear. So I knew that at the end of the 15th day that I still had a crew that could do the job.
Right, right. So it's numbers, it's clarity, it's detail. It's a wonderful job, isn't it?
That's my favorite. I like it. I mean, it does. You do get into the minutia of accounting and doing petty cash and timesheets and all those sorts of things. You really got to understand how these things work and how percentages work. And so there's a lot of numbers in it. Which people don't think is that fun, but when you can control them, or you can see how the outcomes go, it can be fun.
Yeah, I can. And do you normally come in on budget or under budget?
Of course, of course. Kidding me? Here's the thing. I am very, very clear from the start. When I budget a show, in the middle of the show, at the end of the show, where the money is spent and why it's spent in the way that it is. I try to be as transparent and communicative on what's happening in the process. For example, on one of the shows I did, we had an enormous travel budget that I budgeted what I thought was, protect myself, have some pad. But then all the people changed where they were coming from and who was coming. And they needed two first-class tickets each rather than one. The budget changed. It's not like – it's not something you put a cost control on and say, we're not going to fly the star with their wife. We're going to fly the star with their wife. So now I have to communicate to the producers and to the financiers, look, this is the show. This is where the money's going. We haven't accounted for this. We can either not do the show with these people, or we are going to have to do this sort of thing. So did I go over? Yeah, well, the budget was different from when we started. However, I communicated prior to the making the expense, and the people that were financing it made the decision that made sense for them. So, I didn't go over per se. I the budget was exactly what I expect, you know, at the end of the day, where I communicated it would be.
Right. That's the key. Good.
So it's different than going over. Like if you're in a cost plus situation on a commercial, well then every dollar you make is is more money for the company. It's a different situation than on a film or a TV show where the money doesn't come until it's distributed. Commercials, you know, you have a production company markup, say, you know, depending on the company, 18% to 30%, and that's the profit margin. And so you have to do your shoot for under that so that the profit is there so the company stays in business. And one of the things that, you know, I tell people, you know, my approach is a business approach. I'm here to keep the company in business as much as I am to make a good film. If we make a good film and we go bankrupt, not really the point. I mean, you know, we want to keep working.
Exactly. And the money is in your hands and you're responsible. So, yes, you've got to make sure they make a good profit. Because in the years I ran my company, I saw some of the greatest production companies disappear. It was really hard to see them change.
Some of them disappeared because of cash flow. They took on a whole bunch of jobs. Their vendors or their people, their clients didn't pay fast enough. They had $10 million in billing but went bankrupt because they couldn't pay their payroll. You know?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I'm sure that's happened. Wow. Well, you live
well John,
Utah.
I noticed that – oh, I'm sorry,
okay.
Carol.
Okay, Claire.
John, I noticed that you lived in Utah, and you still live there, and you work in L.A. a lot. So do you just take jobs anywhere, or how does that work for you?
The industry these days, certainly over the past 5 years, probably the past 10 years, you can almost live anywhere and work anywhere. All the meetings I take are via phone, Skype, you know, iChat, something where, you know, the first meetings are not flying around or going down the street. Now, if you're in town, then that's fine, but nobody expects it anymore because we're so decentralized. And when I moved from L.A. to Park City, I was here for almost 15 years, 16 years. And I moved to Park City 9 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. And I thought I was going to lose all my clients. No one would call me. And so I never told anybody I left for the first 3 years. And I had, you know, and kept a foot in both worlds. After a while, because the way the internet changed and documents can be sent and signed anywhere in the planet, nobody cares. So, yeah, I work wherever they send me, wherever the job is. I mean, you know, the next job I have is New Orleans. The last job I had is L.A. The time before that was in Park City. The time before that, it was in Detroit. You know, you go where the work is. And with the incentives these days, especially for features and television, the producers and the financiers are chasing where they can get the best return on their money. And that's not often in L.A.
Right. It's all over the country, isn't it?
It's all over the world. Bulgaria, you know, Malaysia, wherever.
Well, let me ask you, a lot of people that I know would love to understand what questions to ask when you're interviewing a line producer. What do you ask to find out the key question, can you do this job, besides looking at a bio?
Right. Bios aren't always the best telling. You should always check people's references. You should ask around, find out people's philosophy and approach to the production. Make sure it matches your vision, because if you don't have somebody that's matching your vision financially, then you're in trouble. You definitely don't want somebody to be in conflict with you. So you have to ask questions that relate to really approach. You know, I was said this earlier, but I approach productions as a business proposition. Like, okay, we have X amount of dollars, and we need to create X thing or Y thing. How do we maximize that dollar value to the production? And I also, you know, try to communicate to directors and producers that are new that the cost of the film is different from the value of the film. So the cost, we could make a $100 million film and it only has $1 million value in the marketplace. Well, then you'd be wasting all your money, your financier's money and everything else. So if you're putting this big CGI shot into the film and it doesn't gain you anything in the return, then it's probably not a good use of the dollars. Where do we put those dollars? Maybe we put it into an actor, or maybe we put it into a location, or to something else. So you have to. I would ask those sorts of questions to anybody you're interviewing for your line producer position. Is how do you think about the production? Do you think of it in terms of making sure all the bills are paid and all the documents are signed, or do you think of it in terms of how to maximize the return on the investment from your financiers, or your studio, or whomever you're working with?
Right. Wow. Good discussion there. Okay, that's a good tip. All right. So, what? Where do you find a good line producer? Where do you recommend they go?
I would. Where would I find a good line producer? The best way, I think, the best way is word of mouth with people that you know that have done a job with the person. If you don't know anybody that's done line producing or done a show, then look at shows you've liked, investigate them, and call that person. Most of us take calls. You can get our phone numbers, you know, from Twitter or IMDb or our agents, and we take calls because we love the business, so we want to talk about the business. So call them up, find out if you like them, look at what they've done, and go have coffee, buy them lunch, ask them to read your script. If they're too busy, I mean, I have this a lot. I get so many scripts that I can't spend all my time reading them. I have to have somebody else read them. So when I get into a meeting, I say, I have to have coverage. I don't have time to read the script yet until these other jobs end, you know, or I give them a timeline of when I can get to it. And, you know, you should find out how busy a person you're talking to is. Like for me, I'm really busy right now. Until after July, it's going to be hard for me to do anything else but the show I'm on. After that, I got all the time in the world, and I'm sitting around, you know, watching the birds on my bird feeder.
Okay, so, right, good questions. Okay.
Well, how do people find you? Through the Producers Guild?
Most people find me from either IMDb or Courser.com. I bought my own name on the website like 15 years ago when the Internet was starting. So I have my own name.
Wait, give us that website, John, and you actually have two,
and
don't you?
Yeah, filmutah.org as well. I run a nonprofit in Utah. Since I moved there, I wanted to give back to the community and try to bring more films to where I live so that I can work and live in the same place. So I have a nonprofit that promotes Utah to the world as a film destination. And that's John at filmutah.org or filmutah.org is the website. You can download our magazine there too. And then Courser.com. Yeah, Courser.com.
Great.
And
well,
my, obviously Facebook, Twitter, my agent, Montana Artists, you know, I'm easy to get a hold of.
Right. Well, while we're on this, is there any other method for people to reach you in case they're looking to find you?
Yeah, if you got it, you know,
or
desperate for a line,
website,
just give me a call.
Email.
Yeah, I mean, I hesitate to give them my phone number because I'll get a million calls, but you can certainly email me. I'm pretty good at getting back within a day or two. And I'm Courser Inc. on Twitter, Courserinc. I'm on, you know, Facebook. You can reach me there. There's both my nonprofit, John Courser and Film Utah on Facebook, and John Courser and Courser Inc. on Facebook. They're both on there. So that's
okay.
The best way to get a hold of me.
Well, I'll definitely have to follow you there on Twitter because that's a good way to connect with you as well. So,
and I always love talking about film finance. So if you ever want to, you know, I'm trying to develop strategies and ways to make it easier for filmmakers to get money. That's my mm-hmm. current goal.
This is a
brilliant. Well, I know a really good talk show that you can listen to.
I know one too.
That would help you. Well, what do you find to be the best part of your job, John?
It's the diversity. filmmaking, I think I mentioned that at the start when you asked me why I got into it. It's music, it's art, it's physics, it's philosophy, it's finance, it's legal, it's everything. And then the people involved are also very diverse, different personalities, different styles. And then the places you go are diverse. You do shoot in Bulgaria one week, and then you're in China the next, and then you're in New Orleans, and then L.A. It's exciting. It's a fun industry to be in. And as a producer, you get to kind of choose where you go and have fun doing it. So, I would recommend it if you have the personality for it. And it's not for everybody, but if you have the personality for it, it's definitely a great job.
Thank you, John, so much for your information, and we hope to have you back. And we will keep in mind anybody that we know that's putting together a film fund to get in touch with you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John. We really appreciated having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, you take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.